thanks to our friends at New England Automotive. He's the voice of your New England Patriots. Bob Soucy. Bob, what did you take away from that loss to the Ravens? Ugh, that was ugly.
Well, Arnie and Brady, guys, it certainly was a comeuppance in some respects, a humbling performance for the boogeymen, the Patriots defense. You know, that's one takeaway I think that a lot of people have. But, you know, it's really a case of several things, I think. And I believe that it's an experience for that defense and for the Patriots that can help them moving forward. Number one, my initial thoughts about the Ravens is that they were well prepared.
Yeah.
And they have an offense that is unique in the NFL for sure. Greg Roman knows what he's doing in terms of utilizing a quarterback like Lamar Jackson and playing to his strengths and also trying to avoid weaknesses that could have been really exploited by the Patriots. And by that, for example, in the passing game, with exception of really the two biggest throws of the night, one of which he made to Mark Andrews on a critical third down in the second half after the Patriots had gotten back into the game, and then the other was on the fourth down on the same drive when he completed the pass to Willie Snead. There was also one on the first drive, too, the first third down that the Ravens faced, where he looked like he was going to be sacked by Dante Hightower and somehow got the ball off of Marquise Brown, made a diving catch, and that prolonged that drive ultimately that set up the first touchdown with help from a Patriots penalty. But I think with the way Roman stretched the defense side to side with passes in the flat, there were a lot of safe passes. They were often to guys like tight ends in motion, like with Nick Boyle, for example, on that touchdown for the Ravens. Beyond that, the fullback, Patrick Ricard from the University of Maine, a Massachusetts guy, he was a beast. He was really a force blocking on several different plays. So locals should be happy next door, and or at least you know, a couple of states over, with his performance as a New Englander. But beyond that, I think you look at the vulnerabilities of the Patriots' defense were exposed fully in this game, and that's the difficulty they had running, stopping the run against Cleveland and against Buffalo. Not only bore itself out, but you know it was truly capitalized on by the Ravens. And then beyond that, I think from the Patriots' offensive point of view, they may have found some silver linings. Number one, the up-tempo style. They didn't use a lot of different personnel groups in the second half. It was pretty much the same look throughout the game. And I think maybe by spreading things out, this team can be better. And they found a rhythm in that game in the second quarter, and it carried through the third quarter. And the only thing that stopped them during that stretch when they could have, I thought they were going to take over the game, was the fumble by Julian Edelman. So I look at that, the performance by Mohamed Sanu, all was not lost in this game. The defense has some work to do. But I think the Ravens played exceptionally well in that game. And early on, too, they got pressure on Brady in those quick series for the Pats in that first half, the three and out, after the Ravens had scored the touchdown. And it's so tough to catch up to the speed of an offense like Baltimore's. The Patriots' defense never had really a chance to not only regroup but try to make adjustments between that first series and the next when the Ravens added to the lead and got the field goal.
Bob, speaking of making adjustments, now they've got their bye week and nobody makes adjustments usually on the fly better than the New England Patriots. Here they have all this time. And, I mean, you look at some of the weaknesses, and you mentioned a couple of them, but what do you see as the biggest glaring weakness that has to be fixed in this time off moving forward into a very tough part of the schedule?
Yeah, I think, for example, on defense, I think that they've got to figure out what personnel they're going to utilize to stop the run and what the best way to do that is. I think in this game, they lined up with three defensive tackles early on in the game against the Ravens. And again, it's hard to say because I think they were very safe. They played a zone defense early on, very, very much concerned with the ability of Jackson to leave the pocket and make big yards. And when you play man-to-man in the secondary, people have their heads turned. And, you know, we've seen Belichick throughout his career, at least in my tenure covering the Patriots, primarily play zone against quarterbacks that pose a running threat consistently. But I think more concerning was the fact that even when they went big, those guys got turned around. They didn't necessarily get blown off the ball, but they got moved out of position. And the linebackers at times were out of position as well. So they've got to figure out what's their best run-stopping personnel. As great as Jamie Collins has been through the first half of the season, primarily against the pass, he struggled against the run. Some of the young linebackers, like Juwan Bentley, I thought, had some issues. Landon Roberts had problems in that game. And Dante Hightower, also in terms of being isolated on backs and in cotton coverage, had some difficulty against the Ravens. But I think more so than all of that, it's what are they going to do moving forward to stop the running game? And how are they going to play the RPO when they face Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles? And a team like the Houston Texans, not necessarily Watson, the same running threat that he had been early in his career, but certainly with his ability and also just the play fakes and the Texans are a team that will try to commit to the run against the Patriots, I have to think, looking ahead to that game. And obviously Dallas falls in between with Ezekiel Elliott and a mobile quarterback like Dak Prescott. But Jackson is not a mobile quarterback. He's as fast as any player I've seen, maybe outside of Tyreek Hill against the Patriots. Wow. Like when you watch him in person, the way he runs that offense, it's at a different level. And I think offensively, they ran the ball in the second half a little bit, 17 carries, but they ran it more successfully than they had, spreading it out with Burkhead and White. Again, out of generally passing sets against defenses, a defense that was a little bit lighter than usual. And I don't think in this game the Patriots really relied on that compact, heavy set running game. And they still have to figure that out. They've got to be able to run the ball in short yardage situations. They've got to solve the red zone issues. They're 50-50 in the red zone, including the Ravens game. And that's not good enough. They've got to get more touchdowns on those trips inside the 20. And I think running the ball in obvious running situations is part of that.
Bob Soucy, voice of the Patriots, joins us every Thursday at 5 o'clock right here on the Huddle 101.3 The Game. All thanks to our friends over at New England Automotive. Snow falling for the first time today, Bob, so good time to go get your tires changed over at New England Automotive. Well, speaking of the bye week, what does the voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy, do during the bye week? Are you looking over game notes and things like that, getting ready for Philadelphia? What do you do?
Well, actually, we moved into a new house over the summer.
Oh, wow.
And this has been a good week to unpack some boxes, but also I did some work on the home office and actually had a chance to relocate from the ground level and now get out of my wife's hair and out of my kids' way and move up to the attic, what used to be the attic. I guess it's still the attic level in our house, which is now my office. So that's the biggest thing that Bob Soucy personally accomplished this week. Beyond that, we'll take some time this weekend and head north. We'll go to Maine for a little bit of time with some friends. But for the most part, it's try to keep a finger on the pulse of what's happening with the team, taking a look at the Ravens game a little bit more comprehensively than I might otherwise because there isn't that next game to prepare for this weekend. And then just try to get set up for the second half of the season from a personal organization standpoint. Nothing exciting, nothing that the listeners will be enthralled by, but it certainly makes a difference in my life. I appreciate it. We've been so lucky, guys, because we've had, I think, in my time here, in 7 years, maybe one or two seasons where there's been an early bye.
Yeah.
And we've been so fortunate to have the bye right around week 8, week 9, week 10. And it's been a godsend, really. And I think for the players, too, I think that's another thing that's important to keep in mind. They played the Browns coming off a bye. They played the Ravens coming off a bye. Now, the Patriots and the Eagles will both be coming off a bye next week in Philadelphia. But I do think that, this team will come back refreshed. And you're right. They'll make adjustments and they'll apply the lessons learned from the Ravens. They're going to have a tough game in Philadelphia, I think, looking ahead to that matchup. But I still think they're in good position, that's for sure.
Bob, I love Rex Burkhead. Everybody knows here I'm the president of the Rex Burkhead fan club. But why is he on the field in the second half over Sony Michel? This is a first-round running back that can't seem to get on the field in the second half over Burkhead, a guy who barely plays, and James White. Why is Sony Michel not playing consistently now in that game?
Well, I think when you say that Burkhead barely plays, you're right, but primarily that's been because of injury.
Yes.
He's been here for 2.5 seasons, and he's missed an entire season's worth of games. But I think when you look at the situation in the second half, specifically against the Ravens, again, they were going to go with three wide receivers, and they were going to go with James White and Rex Burkhead. And once a group was on the field, whether it was White or Burkhead, that player wasn't coming off. Typically, you'll see them rotate backs and rotate receivers. They didn't do that at all in the Ravens game. And in the second half in particular, when we didn't see much of Sony Michel and saw a lot of White, in Burkhead, once they were on the field for a series, they were out there to stay. And I think it's a couple of things. Number one, when Burkhead runs, he hits the hole. He gets the ball and it's straight downhill. He's not a one cut. He's not looking to make looking for an opening to make a cut. There's no hesitation. And I think in a game like that, more so, it's also his ability as a pass catcher and the threat he poses as a pass catcher more so than Sonny's. Sonny's progressed in that area, but you're still, by far and away, your two best pass catching backs are James White and Rex Burkhead. And in that game, they went in thinking pass first. I believe that was the game plan as we saw coming out. And it was definitely the game plan once they got behind 17-0. And even in the second half, when they started to have success, just playing at a rapid pace and really fatiguing that Ravens defense. But I think it's the running style of Burkhead is more suited, especially when they spread things out and when they do run out of the gun or they run out of the spread. And then beyond that, it's his ability as a pass catcher. And Sony's not there yet. And I think a lot of people around here, I don't know what you guys have talked about this week, but I know listening to our station in Boston, 95 Sports Hub, there's a lot of speculation that Tom Brady was upset with Sony Michel over a route that he ran poorly or the wrong route. We see Brady bark at players all the time. We saw it in that game. We see him get on Julian Edelman's case. We see him have words with Philip Dorsett, for example, in the Ravens game. That's not why Sony Michel wasn't on the field the rest of the second half. I think it was the way the game was playing out and what they felt they had to do to not only get back in it, but have a chance to win it.
Bob, I'm assuming you get Super Bowl rings also. Do you wear them during the broadcast? I think I'm going to break out. I think I'm going to wear the third Super Bowl today or something like that. Do you get them or what?
Well, first of all, I've been lucky enough to receive three Super Bowl rings for the three games that I've called.
Wow.
For the Patriots against the Seahawks, Falcons, and Rams.
Wow.
I have the bases covered here at home. I have two kids and a wife, so we are more than happy, and I'm very, very grateful. I don't wear them. In fact, they are kept locked away in a very safe place. In fact, it's funny. I happened to be at the financial institution where they're stored today, and somebody saw me in line waiting for the teller, and he said to me, "Hey, Bob, do you get Super Bowl rings?" And I was this tempted to say, "Yeah, in fact, they're just on the other side of that wall." But at least I hope. I think they are. I hope it's not like Ferris Bueller or somebody took them off their test drive or something. But it's really a blessing, and again, something to try not to take for granted. Just to be a part of a Super Bowl, let alone to receive a Super Bowl ring, because I didn't do anything to earn it. The players and coaches did. And the people in that organization helped put that team on the field. They come out periodically when there's a charity event or if I've got to go speak to a school and want to bring one along. But generally, they stay away under lock and key.
I can imagine.
Bob, they're too heavy. They're too big for my small hands and my seven fingers. And I wouldn't be able to lift my binoculars up to my eyes if I had two of those rings on a single hand. It's ridiculous.
Oh, well, I have really big fingers. If you want to send them to me in the mail, I'd be happy to wear them. So.
Well, I'd be happy to rent them out for an agreed upon fee.
Bob, we did a segment yesterday about which player you would bring back if you could bring back any player that was on the team this season that's been injured or is missing for whatever reason. And Brady and I agreed on that player. Who would it be for you?
Well, first, I'd start with a guy that I'm hoping is going to come back in 2 weeks after the Eagles game against the Cowboys, and that's Isaiah Wynn. Beyond that, I'd say James Devlin. But that's a tough one because I think David Andrews is equally valuable to this team.
That's what we went
and,
with. Yeah.
I think if we're talking of the guys who can't come back, I mean, that's a tough call because I think Devlin and Andrews are so valuable. But I would say Andrews because he would be out there for every snap.
Wow. I love it. He's Bob Sosie, voice of your Patriots, thanks to New England Automotive. Bob, I'm on the Sports Hub also. I don't know if you know that. I do a show on
I do
also.
Know that. You're yes. on You're on weekend nights?
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday night. So.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
We'll definitely have to have you on and put you on a quarter of a billion per month. So.
Arnie, I would enjoy that very much. They put me on Monday mornings. They put me on Friday afternoons. And I enjoy our conversations, especially far more than those Friday afternoon games. gigs when Felger and Maserati put me on the spot all the time.
Bob, enjoy your week off, my friend, and we'll definitely speak to you next week.
Hey guys, thanks so much. And we've got the mercury falling here. I'm just hoping we don't get the snow yet.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.